I'm doing a prid pro. I'm going to get this wrong a million times.
Welcome to episode 317 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including Windows Media Center, Xbox, and other Windows platforms. Hey, I am home, I think, for 3 weeks in a row now, Josh.
Has it really been that long? It's been me who's been screwing with the schedule this month. Not you for a change.
Oh, yeah. And we're at our usual time on Tuesday evenings, 20 some minutes past our expected start time, right on schedule.
Well, I think that means we're, exactly, right on schedule, because we never start right at 8. All right. So let's jump into some listener feedback.
All right. And we have a couple email messages. The first one is from Mike. And I believe Mike is contacting us from Australia. He says that a German retailer has been promoting items across their supermarket chain. I think he's talking about Aldi, actually. And he says, hopefully this bodes well for Windows Phone. He is talking about ads that he included images of in the message he sent us for a Windows or Android phone, same hardware, but different OSs on the same platform. One for $129, which I assume is Australian dollars, which would be about $101 US, for a quad-core processor, dual SIM, Bluetooth 4, 5-megapixel camera. So pretty decent specs for a $100 phone. And a tablet for $249, again, assuming Australian, so roughly $200 US. And it is a 10-inch screen, 10.1 inches, specifically Windows 8.1, 1 gig of RAM, front and rear cameras, micro SD and mini OTG port. So pretty good, you know, low-end phones available at a reasonable price at a local grocery store. That's pretty cool. And he says, I purchased the phone after a few miserable Android years. My first reaction is love, and it's just another node in my Windows network. So, Josh, I don't know about you. I'm not at all familiar with what the different countries are selling in what retail chains, but this is pretty cool that you can pick one of these up in your grocery store. I guess you can get Go phones in US grocery stores, right?
Yeah, that's true. And the brand here, it's Baun. I don't know. I'm guessing that these are only sold in Aldi's in Australia, although we do have Aldi's here in the US. So maybe I should swing by an Aldi and look for a cheap Windows tablet.
Just what you need, another Windows tablet.
Well, just don't tell my wife.
Who just walked past you.
Exactly. So thank you, Mike, for the tip. I'm sure our Australian listeners will be glad to know about that. We also got an email from John. He says, hey guys, I just listened to the latest episode. He's talking about episode 316, on my way to work. I used to have the same Sony TV as Kevin back in the day. He's, of course, referring to the email that we talked about last week from the guy who was having trouble with color calibration on his really old Sony CRT HD TV. John says, I was thinking that this most likely has nothing to do with HTPC. My first thought was to connect a different source to the TV and see what it looks like. A DVD or Blu-ray should answer that question. I would almost guess that not only did the setting get switched to Vivid, but perhaps the colors, brightness, etc. got messed with as well. I seem to recall that these settings applied across all inputs for this TV, so changing the color setting in Vivid mode would also change it in movie mode, for example. That's a crazy way of doing color settings, by the way.
Yeah, it really is. But hey, Sony U experience.
Exactly. He goes on to say, I would suggest Kevin get a test pattern disc and calibrate his TV directly from a DVD or Blu-ray player first. then connect the HTPC and go from there. Test patterns can be downloaded and burned to disk from avsforum.com. Do a search for REC709 test pattern and you'll get the link. We also got some feedback from Rob H. over at the AV Rant podcast, and I forwarded both of these emails on to Kevin, and I haven't heard back. So I don't know if it fixed his problems. I don't know if he got fed up and bought a new TV.
I hope he didn't go to that extreme if this is really just a matter of TV settings.
Yeah, hopefully not.
You know, John knows his stuff. He calibrates TVs kind of as a hobby. So I would definitely give this a try and see how this goes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got one more email, and this was directed towards me from listener Alan. As I was talking about testing out the use of an Xbox 360 as an extender based off of my Windows 8.1 machine, he wanted to give me a recommendation on where I might be able to find one for cheap. He said, check the pawn shops. He's got a nice little media center set up and lots of TVs around his house and didn't want to have to pay $200 a pop for Xboxes at every TV. So he started checking pawn shops and he was able to find nice Xbox 360s. You know, they only came with one controller, the power cord, and an AV cable, but it's all you need for an extender. And he was getting them for around $95 a piece. So that's not a terrible price as long as it's in decent condition and works. I mean, frankly, I wouldn't even care if the DVD drive worked, you know? So nice little tip, not something I would have ever even thought of trying, but I think we have a pawn shop nearby.
That's a really interesting idea. You know, I used to live downtown, and in most cities, there are usually quite a few pawn shops. And I don't think I've ever been in one. In fact, I think my entire exposure to pawn shops has been either through movies or through, so embarrassed to say this, Pawn Stars.
You should be embarrassed.
No, great feedback. So how did people get us feedback this week?
Well, those emails came in at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can use that same email address or give us a call at 877-856-4933. So let's move on to some news. We've got something that we're putting in the Windows Media Center category. It's maybe a little bit of a loose definition there, but what do we have going on here, Richard?
So we have Media Center news, but it is not happy Media Center news. Not necessarily. It's one more program that isn't going to work smoothly with Media Center, but there is a workaround. So I'm talking about Amazon Unbox.
Amazon what?
Right. Right. Remember that? Amazon Unbox is the incredibly awkward name that they had first come out with for their video service that they had online. And this was supposed to compete with Netflix, but it was really pretty lame initially. But one of the things that they did was they released a desktop app for Windows. And one of the things that that desktop app for Windows let you do was download things that you had purchased and put them in Windows video format that you could then play through Windows Media Player, therefore in Windows Media Center if you had them in your video library. So pretty cool that you could actually download your purchases from Amazon, now Amazon Video or Amazon Instant Video, and have them available on your computer to play locally. I thought that was a pretty cool thing. And I had some stuff that I had purchased. Every once in a while, they have free stuff that you can download for or purchase for free. I'm not talking about Instant through Prime. I'm talking about just standard Amazon Instant Video.
Right, because this was all way before Prime.
Way, way before Amazon Instant Prime Video or whatever combination of words is used to describe that. So what they're doing, unfortunately, is they are shutting down the service behind this application, which means that even if you have the application on your desktop, it's going to stop working, which means you're no longer going to be able to download the videos that you've purchased. And so they are actually quite impressively offering an option to allow you to download them to a form that will permanently make them available for you to watch on your Windows PC. And all you have to do if you have the app is get the upgrade for it. If you don't have the app, you may want to go get it and make sure that you have the latest version, because this will allow you to download all your purchased videos to your Windows PC and watch them through Windows Media. Now, I have not tried this conversion yet, and I don't know how this is going to work. I think there's something different about how they're handling the DRM on the video files. So what I don't know is if once you download those videos to your PC, if they're basically stuck on that PC. You know, the same old problem where the license doesn't move from computer to computer, so that if you ever rebuilt the PC or decided to move to a different PC for your media center, that they wouldn't carry along. I don't know. This is something that I'm hoping I'll get to try in next week or so. The program shuts down at the end of March, so you have a good month and a week or so to try and get these videos converted and downloaded if you own any that you'd like to have physically. Now, your purchases aren't going away. You can still go to any of the other available video players that Amazon has to watch your purchased videos. You're just no longer going to be able to download them to your Windows PCs after this shutdown.
You know, this is something that I used forever ago, and it did it did really come in handy. To give you an idea of how long ago I used this, I'm pretty sure the first thing that I bought on it was an episode or two of Battlestar Galactica while it was still on TV.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was quite a while ago, but it worked really well.
Yeah, no, it totally did. And the first thing that I bought was, and I know that it was later than this came out, it was a couple seasons later, but the first thing that I bought was the first season of Battlestar Galactica in HD.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that was cool about it was it wasn't just purchases. You could also download rentals. So I did that a few times too, where, you know, say Jen and I knew we wanted to rent a movie to watch that night. I would come home from work, rent it, download it, then we'd go to dinner, and by the time we're back, it's fully downloaded, and I wouldn't have to worry about streaming and buffering and all of that craziness.
Right. And remember, this is before the time that they actually had any 10-foot interface apps on different set-top boxes. So this was really your only way of watching it on a big screen. If you had a home theater PC, you could download it to that, or you could actually pull it down to your TiVo through a completely different convoluted process. Now, which still works, by the way, which is just fascinating. As they're finally starting to convert some of the older boxes to the new Amazon app, that'll be going away too. So this is sad, but it's nice that they're giving consumers a path. And we don't often see this when people announce that they're shutting stuff down. So thank you, Amazon.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this is when we would typically move into the Windows Phone news, but really not much to talk about on the Windows Phone side. So we'll move on to more desktop-oriented Windows entertainment stuff. And on that front, the most interesting story I found was Origin, which is basically the digital gaming arm of Electronic Arts, is now making their own gaming PCs. And they're called...
Why?
To compete with Steam machines, I guess? I'm not sure.
Because those are so successful.
Well, and you can get them with the Steam OS installed on them. I mean, they're very clearly marketed as a gaming PC that you stick in your living room. The problem is, they're all really stinking ugly. You've got a few different options in cases. And Richard, there might only be one of the like five available cases that you would even consider putting in your living room. And for you, it might not even be one. It might be none, because there was only one that I would consider as a piece that I would make visible to people sitting on my couch. Maybe that doesn't matter, but one thing that does matter with this type of hardware is price. And these things aren't cheap either. Now, I wouldn't expect them to be. You know, you're kind of expecting a higher end experience, higher end materials, but the cheapest one starts at $1,000, and it's not even a Core i5. And wow, it's supposed to, these are gaming PCs. I mean, you can go absolutely bonkers. I've never seen PCs that could be customized as much as these things. It just, the number of options, I mean, you can choose between like 12 different motherboards. You know, when's the last time you went to an online computer builder place and they gave you an option at all about a motherboard?
Yeah,
let alone 12. So, you know, they look interesting. They can obviously be used as a home theater PC by default. They come with Windows 8.1. You can get it with Windows 8.1 Pro for only $50 more, which then means you're only $10 away from Windows Media Center if you want to toss it on there. You can also get it with Windows 7 if you want Windows 7. So, you know, they're certainly going to be powerful, certainly more than powerful enough to do your typical home theater PC duties. But, you know, one of my big questions with boxes like this is, are they going to be quiet enough? You know, gaming PCs tend to be really powerful, which means lots of heat.
Lots of fans.
Which means lots of fans. Yeah. Man, it's got to be quiet if I'm going to be sticking it in my living room. So anyway, they're called the Origin Omega line. And if you want to check them out, we've got a link to the story in the show notes.
All right. Good stuff. Well, that's it for Windows this week. So how about Xbox?
Also, not a ton of news on the Xbox side, but if you're in the Xbox dashboard preview program, I'm not sure if they call it dashboard. It might just be preview program. But if you're in that preview program, you probably got an update recently, and maybe you didn't notice it because on the surface, it's not immediately obvious what this new update brings. But there's at least one feature in here that a lot of people have been clamoring for. And that's the ability to take screenshots. It sounds kind of silly, and a lot of people are treating this like, oh my gosh, why did it take so long to do screenshots? But I can't think of a home game console that ever supported screenshots.
No, in fact, you used to have to use something like one of those Hotpog pass-through boxes or something like that to be able to capture the frames if you wanted to do that. Now, they're not making it inherently obvious by any means.
No, it's not the most obvious, but it's also not that hard to do. And it's, you do it the same way that you actually would access the Snap Center. So if you double tap on that Xbox button in the middle of the controller, where we're used to seeing Snap Center, you still get Snap Center, but to the left of the left icon, you know, for whatever is the big part of the screen in snap mode, there's a little message that says press Y to save the screenshot. And it sounds a little weird because what it's actually doing is as soon as you double tap that Xbox button, it takes a screenshot. And then if you press Y, it actually saves it. And the reason they did it that way, I guess, is in some games, they detect when that Xbox button is double pressed and they might pull up a menu. So this way, you're guaranteed to get a screenshot of the actual game footage that you're trying to take a screenshot of. So that does make sense. You know, it's not super obvious how to do it, but I'm not sure what they would do to make it more obvious. It's not like they're going to add another button to the controller.
Right. And this is something that you have to be able to do that isn't going to interfere with other already existing keys. So I get it. Is it fair to assume that it's pausing what's going on behind?
You know, I don't think it does, which I think is by design, because, you know, you can say you're at a loading screen and you want to bring up something in a snap mode. You want it to keep loading. So, you know, if you want to pause it, then you hit the pause button. But, you know, you could use this in games, but you could also use this for anything that you're doing on your Xbox One. I would think, I didn't actually test this, but I imagine you could use this to take screenshots of a TV show, maybe even while watching Netflix or something. Maybe something hilarious is on the screen and you want to tweet a photo of it. All of that is possible with the screenshot feature and the upload functionality. So
I'm wondering if you could use it even to take a picture of your home screen.
Yeah, I would think you could. I'm not one who tends to share a lot of photos or videos of my gaming experiences, so I didn't actually try this yet, but I imagine you could take a screenshot of anything.
Cool.
Like I said, it then ends up in the Upload app, and the Upload app has seen a lot of enhancements. We talked a little bit about these last week, like the green screen functionality and things like that that are coming. They've also got full support for these screenshots in there, of course. And with the screenshots, you can also access them from the system settings and use a screenshot as your home screen background. They've enhanced the friends list to show you suggested friends, which I found somewhat interesting. And when I went in there, it showed me a couple of people who are apparently following me on Xbox Live. I don't know who they are. I'm kind of hoping they're listeners, but I don't really know for sure. And I couldn't easily tell just by looking at their Xbox Live activity, obviously. So it'll show you some suggested friends based on people that you've played with recently. They also show you people who are really popular Twitch broadcasters for games that you play, and all in the idea of just having more friends to play with on Xbox Live. They've added some more customization to the ability to share your real name with people. In the past, it's worked as you get to manually choose who sees your real name. And now they've added a couple of other options there. You can still set it to, you know, you have to pick which friends see your real name, but now you can also say, show it to everyone who I'm friends with, or just show it to everybody. You know, anybody who's on Xbox Live can see your real name.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it can be. I didn't go in and change this yet. I'm not sure exactly how I feel about it. I don't know that I want my real name out there for everybody.
Well, I like it because my Xbox name is ridiculous, because I couldn't find anything that I would normally use that wasn't already taken. So for me, the only people that I'm following, or the only people that I'm connected with, are you and I think two other people, right? So I don't mind that these people that I know would have my real name there. So I don't know. I think it could be cool.
Yeah, sure. They've also added some more customization to the tile transparency options. I wouldn't have expected you could add more customization to that, but now you can essentially adjust how transparent the tiles are. They're either not, they're mostly solid, or mostly transparent. You've got a lot of options there if you really want to tweak just how transparent the tiles are on the home screen. And then maybe most relevant to at least one group of listeners to the show, One Guide and TV Tuner support coming to our friends in Australia in anticipation of the TV Tuner being launched, I believe, in the middle of March in Australia.
Wow.
Yep. So that's all available currently to Xbox One preview users. And if you're not a preview user, this will be the March system update. So probably less than 2 weeks away for everybody else to be getting these enhancements on their Xbox One.
Very cool. Hey, while we're talking about Xbox, I wanted to throw something out there. This is not a complete non sequitur, but it's kind of a non sequitur. So remember when we talked about the Xbox video suggestion forum before?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, I went out there to see what's going on out there. Have we talked about this before? The make the Xbox One a media center extender suggestion is like by 300% the most voted for item right now, and it's marked as under review.
We have talked about that. It's been a while because I think they marked it as under review months ago, which is probably why you don't remember us talking about it.
Okay. Okay.
There's also some interesting ones out there for allow me to use a TV tuner with it. I think there's one specifically about Seton tuners and one specifically about silicon dust tuners. And
yep, the Seton tuner one is second in that list now.
With thousands of votes, right?
Yeah, it's quite a lot, actually. So if you haven't already gone out and voted and you're interested in this, just Google the Xbox video suggestion forums or something like that, and you'll find it pretty quickly. I went out, signed in, and made sure that I had allocated a healthy share of my votes to those top items.
Yeah, and I believe it's actually over at User Voice, so it might just be something simple like xbox.uservoice.com or something. You know, Rennie asked a really interesting question in the chat. If One Guide support is coming to Australia for the Xbox One, what about guide data in Windows Media Center?
Oh, can I bet on that? Can I bet?
Only if it's a positive bet.
No, I'm not voting for it. I was going to vote against it. I don't think that's going to happen. That would require investment in Media Center from Microsoft.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that's probably not going to happen. But it's a really interesting thought, for sure.
And if you get that before I get a fixed search capability in Netflix, I'm going to be really unhappy.
Yeah, I would say that guide data is more important than search in Netflix.
Yeah, but Netflix affects me.
We know it's all about you, Richard. It's all about you.
No, it's also about our listeners, particularly those who are nice enough to listen to us on the other side of the globe.
Right, when it's probably some weird time there right now.
Well, I like to think that maybe he's getting up now.
It's probably like the middle of the day, actually, but I don't know.
I can't keep track.
Like 3 days in the future, though.
All right. Well, that is it for Microsoft news tonight. Now, there is some industry news that I wanted to talk about. And, you know, we keep on getting lots of email messages from people interested in Plex. So I want to make sure that when there's Plex news, we cover it. And today, Plex announced through a very, very odd blog posting that they have an update preview for their Roku app. And it is a major update. And I don't know if you took a look at the screenshots from this, Josh, but I mean, this thing looks like an Xbox app.
It looks just like the Xbox One app.
Yeah, it's really slick. It has nice big image tiles of posters, and it has different size tiles and lets you drill down for more information. It is a horizontally scrolling interface, very much like Xbox. Very, very slick. And they're adding some new capabilities like trailers and the ability to use the Plex Companion. Now, they haven't yet included photos and playlists and channels, but they say that that is something that's coming. The good news is that, from what I can tell, this works on everything Roku. And I mean everything. Even back to the first generation Roku, they're going to be updating the app that's available for all Roku platforms. The Roku 1, 2, and 3 series, the Roku Stick, and even Roku TVs, which blows my mind because there have been many, many times when developers have put out app updates for Roku and they've said, hey, you know, we're only going to do the latest version.
Yep. Yeah. So this does look just like the Xbox One app, but it does have some features that the Xbox One app doesn't have, like support for music, which still kind of amazes me that the Xbox One app doesn't do yet.
Yeah, that's true. I had forgotten about that.
So the other important thing that we should point out is you do have to be a subscriber to Plex Pass to get this, because it's a preview, and that's one of the benefits of being a Plex Pass user is you get early access to things. So if you've got Plex Pass, or if you're willing to pay for Plex Pass, then you can run out and get this on your Roku TV. The same is true for the Xbox One, and I think it's still true that you need Plex Pass to use this app on the Xbox One. Eventually, when the app is no longer in preview mode, then everyone can get it for free. But for the time being, you're going to need a Plex Pass, which, if you're just paying by the month, is $5 a month.
All right. Well, that's pretty good news. And if I were a Plex user, which I'm not, that would probably be something I'm interested in, because I like the Roku platforms. I have Roku devices, and this would be a nice way of getting to my content. So check it out if you're interested. And that, believe it or not, at 30 some minutes in, is the news. We knew we would have a light show this week. Usually we're wrong.
Well, that's okay, because it looks like we've both got a lot going on in our entertainment centers.
Well, that's true. And I know that I have. So a couple things have been going on for me. So a long time ago, you may have remembered that I had mentioned that my first gen home server, Microsoft home server, had kind of died. And I wasn't quite sure how I was going to get the content off of it. Well, I'm happy to report. You can tell I wasn't too worried about it because I'm just dealing with it now. But I'm happy to report that I found a drive that had a more or less recent server backup on it from my home server. So I was able to restore my photo library, which is really what I was most concerned about, because my music, worst case scenario, I can always re-rip. But I didn't want to lose my photos. And it had nearly everything, not everything, but nearly everything from my photo library. And things that it didn't have, I know I still have elsewhere. So that is great news, and I'm very happy about it. And I put all of that stuff out on my new 2011 home server that I'm still working on kind of getting up to speed the way that I want it. Now, in the meantime, I've realized I need a new good photo management tool. What do you use for photo management, Josh?
I upload my photos to Flickr.
Okay, well, that's a great solution, actually. Flickr has a surprisingly good tool set of things that you can use to tag and organize and share or not share as you want to. And I think, the free version is a terabyte of storage, so you're not really going to run out. Or if you pay, I think you get unlimited storage. And they even support RAW video format on Flickr. For some reason, I'm not sure why yet. I haven't figured this out yet. For some reason, I'm not comfortable putting my library out on, like, all of my photos out on something that Flickr or Google or Microsoft or one of those companies owns. I would feel more comfortable about backing up through an actual encrypted backup service. But I still don't have anything for actually managing the photos, for editing them, for cropping them, for sharing them, for building booklets from them. I used to use Picasa for that. Well, I mean, Google has all but abandoned Picasa. The updates to that are basically security or major flaw fixes, but they haven't really enhanced it much in the last couple of years. So I'm trying to figure out what my options are there in terms of managing my enormous library of photographs.
Are you running Windows 10 on anything currently?
No.
Because the new Photos app in Windows 10, I think, does some of this stuff. So I'd be curious to see what your thoughts are on that and if that would solve your problems.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what the likelihood is of me having a Windows 10 machine around that's going to be a daily access kind of thing.
What about a VM?
Possibly. I run a VM for Windows 7 a lot so that I can have Play Later and some other stuff running, but every time my computer goes to sleep when I have that VM running, I end up with problems. So I don't know what's going on with that. All right. So if you have suggestions about photo management software for a predominantly Mac user or online, potentially, I'm willing to consider that. But my requirements are that I want to be able to organize things. I want to be able to tag things. I want to be able to print and maybe publish things. I also want it to be non-destructive. So I want to be able to edit photographs without actually deleting the original. And a lot of programs do that nowadays, but not everyone does. Not every program out there does that. So now my music library was also in the backlog, was also in the backup. I'm not entirely convinced that that's going to be up to date. So I'm going to see what I can get off of that. But like I said, I can always re-rip those. And basically what I'm doing with my music library anyway is pulling it all onto the server and then using iHome server to bring it into iTunes. And then using iTunes Match to make sure that I basically get a digital copy of it out in the cloud. So, you know, I have the audio files in their original form on the server, and then in the cloud, I have it on iTunes. So I'm not too worried about that because I can always re-rip. But that's kind of what's been going on with the home server stuff. Now, the other thing that I did this last week was I bought Dave Zatz's hand-me-down TiVo Mini that he was getting rid of on Twitter this week.
You're buying more TiVo stuff? What's going on here?
I am. So he upgraded to the new TiVo Mini 2, and there's a whole series of things going on with that that you can check out Zatz Not Funny to find out about. Is it a new device? Isn't it a new device? Does it have the same capability? Well, in fact, it's a new device, but he has the new TiVo Mini 2, and so he sold his TiVo Mini, the original, and I love the one that I have. I have one on my TV, literally double-sided sticky tape to the back of my TV in my kitchen, and it works great. And so I thought, you know, adding that to the bedroom would probably be really good because stuff that I record for the household is recorded on TiVo, and this allows you to do the thing where you hand off, you know, you start in one place, pick it up in another. So I basically bought this for the bedroom. I haven't set it up yet, but I think that this will be a good addition. I had a TiVo in there, and I'll just put that in a closet instead of actually having to have something with a whirring disk drive that's starting to make more noise as it gets older. I'll just replace it with this. So that's it for the hardware. Now, I've also been watching some TV. The series Constantine ended, and I'm kind of bummed by that. I really enjoyed that, and that just ended this last week, I think.
Now, the series or the season?
No, the series.
Oh.
Yeah, they canceled it, and they finished out the 13-episode buy that they originally had. So, it's over. And while one thing dies, something else starts. And when I heard that Amazon gave a green light to Man in the High Castle, I decided to watch the pilot. Josh, do you know anything about this?
I know that it's like takes place as if the Germans had won World War II and they're in control of the U.S. or something like that.
Yeah, it's an alternate reality post-war, and I like it. I think it has a lot of potential, and I think it's something we're going to both enjoy here at the house. So this is something that after watching that pilot, I'm excited for the series. I'm really looking forward to that.
Do we have any idea when that's going to be out?
I have no idea. I mean, if they just gave it the green light now, that means the production hasn't even started. So we're at least a year out.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, that's good news. And I think they had mentioned this before, but they also announced that they were renewing Alpha House, which I just finished in season 2, and they're renewing Transparent, which isn't at all surprising because it won Emmys and it was an amazing series. So good stuff going on Amazon. And then finally, I watched the Oscars. I had to watch, I recorded it so that I can compress a 3.5-hour show into like 2 hours, but I had to watch it. And after that, I'm coming out thinking that, yeah, I should probably actually watch Birdman.
I guess, you know, I was with some family on Sunday and they were talking a little bit about the Oscars, and I don't think I've even seen any of the movies that were up for Movie of the Year or whatever the Granddaddy Award is at the Oscars.
The Granddaddy Award. Yeah, I think the only one that I was really familiar with was Birdman, and I had pre-ordered it, and I just haven't watched it yet, but I heard so many good things about it that I thought, okay, I'll get it. And there was a pre-order special on Amazon, so, you know, I couldn't resist.
Is that a superhero movie like Ant-Man?
No. However, there is superhero subtext.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, that's it for me. That's what I've been doing. How about you? What's going on in your entertainment center?
All right. Well, I had teased that I was going to be giving this extender model a try, and maybe I even had done it a little bit prior to last week's show. It's still going fairly well. It doesn't, the Xbox 360 does not always turn on and off. And I didn't try repositioning it yet to see if that would fix it, but it is working well. You know, it's nice and speedy, but I don't think I'm going to go this route. I don't think I want to go back to the extender model. So I still got to have something. You know, I'm not going to ditch Windows Media Center. So the other option is do something with my aging home theater PC. I don't really want to spend the money on fully upgrading it. So at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy an SSD, and that's it, and slap that in there, reinstall Windows, not install a bunch of crap on it again, which is what I always say, but I always end up doing anyway. And we'll see how it goes. You know, it's obviously going to make it faster. Is it going to make it a speed demon? Probably not, but it'll be faster. And as long as it's faster and doesn't have issues, I think that's going to be enough for at least for a while, at least for the next few months, till we find out if anything else cool is coming down the line. You know, maybe, you know, I keep holding out for an Xbox One based solution, and this would be a great year for Microsoft to do that. I don't know if they will, but, you know, if I could just use a Seton network tuner or a Silicon Dust network tuner directly through the Xbox One, that would be the ideal situation for me. So yeah. Don't really want to dump $400 or $500 into a home theater PC right now.
So while you're working on your home theater PC, if I were to send you one of my spare front plates for the bay that you're not using, would you at least put that on it?
Sure. You've got a spare black 5 1/4 inch bay cover?
I'm sure I do.
I guess I could do that, Richard. No one can see this box. It's behind my entertainment center.
Everybody can see it. It's up on our website.
You want me to replace the picture after I do this?
Yeah, could you do that? That'd be good.
All right. I guess I could do that. So I've also been playing with Plex some more. One of our listeners a while ago had offered to do the whole Plex Home and Plex library sharing sort of thing with me. And so I reached out to him this last week and said, hey, if you're still interested in sharing it with me, let's give it a try, because I've never done it. So within minutes, he replied to my email and had shared his library with me. And it's interesting. So the way that this works is it's not that it just shares his library with me or whatnot. It is an offer to join that person's Plex Home. So you no longer have your own Plex Home, which means you no longer have your own managed accounts. So like I had my own Plex Home, obviously, and I had made a managed account for my daughter. Now I'd never used it, but it was something I was at least investigating. And all of that goes away because now you're just part of the other person's home. So you've got your one account that can access their home.
It makes sense, though, right? I mean, that's how they kind of alleviate people doing this illegally.
Sure, although it doesn't really alleviate that at all. I have no idea how this guy came across his recordings, and I still question the legality of this whole thing. Like, is this really kosher? Like, for me to just log into his account and start streaming his movies?
Well, I think the idea is that you're a household. You have multiple members in your household. You may not all be at home or continuing to live in the same household at all times. So let's say your kid goes off to college. No longer does that person have access to your home library. Why would that be? That person should be able to, an old term here, but dial in to the old library that they had access to previously.
I guess. It all feels a little weird. I don't know. It's also, this guy has way, way more content than I do. I think his movie library was 700 titles or something like that. You know, mine is like 50. So I don't have any.
This is more my size.
Yeah, I guess. So I had not had any experience with Plex in a giant library. And I got to say, on the Xbox, it's not a great experience. And even on the website, it's only okay. But on the Xbox, your only real way of sorting through this stuff is you can skip to movies that start with the letter S, you know, that sort of thing. But there's no filtering by genre, you know, any of that stuff. It does on the home screen have quick links to things that you're in the middle of and, you know, recently added things or recently released movies. And that's useful. But what if I know I'm just in the mood for a sci-fi movie? I have no way of just displaying my sci-fi movies on the Xbox One.
That's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. And I went back tonight to double check just to make sure that I hadn't missed it. And I just don't see a way to do it.
Well, because we haven't had any Plex email in a while, maybe if someone knows how to do that, they can let us know. Remember, specifically, we're talking about on Xbox One.
Right. Because in the web interface, you do have options for filters and things like that. So it is doable. I don't think it's the most user-friendly, but it's doable for sure. And I just don't see anything like that on the Xbox One. All right, so that's my Plex experience. So last week, we teased a couple of times. I shouldn't say we. It's all my fault. I teased a couple of times that I had watched the next Marvel movie. And then I completely forgot to talk about it when we got to this segment. So the previous weekend, I had watched Iron Man 2 with my wife. And oh my gosh, it was not a good movie. Like,
oh,
Jen thought it was okay. I fell asleep while watching this movie. It just wasn't good. And we did end up talking about this a little bit in the live chat after last week's show. So anyone who's in the live chat knows that we had an extensive conversation about what probably boils down to, maybe I just don't like superhero movies.
Yeah, I think we need to like no longer let you provide feedback on superhero movies.
Maybe. So we'll see. We're going to keep going. I've got Thor and the first Captain America movies in my possession. So I don't know if there's going to be time for them this weekend. Hopefully there will, because we got to kind of get a move on here, but we'll see. Thor is next. I'm not at all excited about Thor. I am interested though in Captain America. So although I've heard that the second Captain America is way better than the first one. So we'll see. I don't know.
But remember, it does not matter what order you watch those two movies in. They have little to no dependence upon each other. So if you really wanted to cheat and jump to Captain America, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, I know, but Jen wants to watch Thor. So we'll do
Thor.
And
you have to go back to Thor because it does laid down some mythology that matters. And really, the first Captain America lays out mythology that continues for a long time that you need to follow.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll definitely watch them. I just, you know, this Friday, I'm watching House of Cards. So we'll see. One other show that I've started this week, a coworker let me borrow the first season of The Newsroom, a show that you love.
Yeah.
But didn't at some point during the, I believe, three seasons of The Newsroom, at some point, weren't you like really close to giving up on the show? Or am I thinking of a different show?
No, you're right on. I was pretty much fed up with the second season. I thought the second season did way, way, way too much of that jumping around in time thing that Sorkin is known all too well for. Mm. So, yeah. It's good. I mean, there's still good stories, but it seemed like a convoluted way of telling the story.
I see. So I'm 2.5 episodes into the first season. I am really liking it. It has a few too many like sitcom sort of scenes for me. Like I don't watch sitcoms. I don't watch comedies. So I could do without some of that stuff. But it's a cool topic. I am really liking it. I was uncertain about halfway through the first episode if I would want to keep watching it, because through that first half of the first episode, the main character was such a jerk. He was so awful that I wasn't sure that I could continue watching the show if he was going to continue to be that awful. And I don't think this is that much of a spoiler. It's the first episode. He lightens up a little, just a little, but it's enough. So I'm definitely going to stick with this for a little while. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't at least finish out this first season. It looks good.
Yeah, I mean, it has the typical witty, and this might be what you're thinking in terms of sitcom, sometimes overtly humorous Sorkin repartee. It also has, they introduce a character to balance him, which I think is what makes him tolerable as the show goes on. And I asked you earlier today, or yesterday, I think it was, if you had yet made it to the news event in the show. And I'm curious if you have yet, because one of the things that I think is so cool about this show is that they base the storylines around their coverage of things that we all remember.
Right. And yeah, I have, because I'm now a couple episodes in. So yeah, they spent basically the rest of the first episode talking about a major news event that happened in real life. And yeah, the rest of it has all been at least based in real life. You know, the political things that are going on in the second and third episode, like I want to go back and research some of the people that they're talking about and see how accurate some of these stories actually were.
Yeah.
So it's very cool. I know you had suggested it a long time ago, but it's an HBO show. I don't get HBO, so I just kind of fortunately had a coworker who had the first season on Blu-ray and let me borrow it. So it's going to end up being like Homeland, where I have to buy all this crap on Blu-ray.
Or find friends who have them.
Right.
Well, I forgot to mention something, and I'm curious if you have been continuing to watch this or not, but I finished off State of Affairs.
Did State of Affairs finish off State of Affairs?
Good question. We still don't know.
Oh, okay.
So State of Affairs had an initial 13 episode bye. They've run all 13 episodes, and it was a really good season finale. We don't know if there's more.
Don't you love that?
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating. Actually, now that I think about it, I don't know if it was, it might have been 10. I don't know if it was 10 or 13, but they had an initial buy. They ran the whole thing. The story arc completed, and they put in a teaser that is a good lead in to a next storyline, but we really have no idea whether anything's going to happen with that or not. So I hope it does continue on because I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I still haven't watched any more of it, but I am still interested. Just been a little busy with all this other stuff.
Well, I hope you watch it regardless. I think I'm going to mention here that while we were talking, Dan in the chat heard that Constantine was canceled and deleted the remaining episodes from his media center. So give State of Affairs at least to the end of the season, okay, Josh?
Well, the difference here, see, if I were Dan, I'm not sure that I would have deleted those three episodes of Constantine because it ended. Like, they properly ended it, right?
Well, no, they really didn't.
Oh. Well, then maybe
it was the same
have.
Sort of situation where they had an original buy and they didn't know it was ending before they wrapped it up.
Oh, then yeah, I might have done the same thing. And I can't make any promises. If they cancel State of Affairs before season two, I might do the same thing and just delete them all.
Man, it was worth watching.
It's got to be really stinking good for me to watch a show that got canceled. Essentially in the middle. You know, it's got to meet the Firefly mark, right?
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
The only show that I can think of that was worth going back to watch despite getting canceled in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I need to watch that again. I loved that. That's it. That's what's been going on.
That's it.
So we have a couple announcements. I have one. I think you have one. And for my announcement, I wanted to remind people again that if you're going to South by Southwest and you're interested in smart home technology, stop on by the smart home party that is being sponsored by Z-Wave, the Z-Wave Alliance specifically. It's on St. Patrick's Day, 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Fogo de Chão. You need to RSVP, though. So if you're interested in going, send a message to mail@nextmarket.co. That is the email address at the Next Market website, Next Market, operated by our friend Mike Wolf. So please consider that if you're going to be there. I am going to be there. I'm going to be attending, and I'd love to meet you if you're going to be visiting South by Southwest.
Cool. Well, I just have one quick update. I don't talk about this a lot on the show, but most of our listeners are probably aware that I'm in the process of adopting a little girl from China, and we hit a pretty big milestone this last week in that we have basically finished up the gigantic stack of paperwork. It's gone to lots of different legal places. It's gone to the Chinese consulate. It's been all over the country, and we submitted that to our adoption agency. It is the culmination of months of paperwork. So
wow,
it was a pretty huge deal, and we're pretty excited about it. And Jen wrote a nice little blog post describing the whole thing with pictures of the giant stack of paper over at our blog for this whole experience, which is greatwalltogreatlakes.com, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes also.
That's very cool. I'm very happy for you, my friend.
Thank you. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a bunch of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther, and I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. You can also find us on Google+, and there's that Windows Media Center community out there if you'd like to connect with other Media Center users. You can call and leave us a message by dialing 877-856-4933 or just email us entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can check out some of our other podcasts at the DMZ, including The End User, covering the latest tech news from the end user perspective, and Richard's other show, Home On, covering home automation and control. What's going on with Home On this week?
So the current episode with Mike Fache is still out there and still hearing some great feedback on that. So thanks to everybody that's given us some thoughts about that show. I think it was really interesting to find out what was going on in his new home. In our next episode, I'm doing a quid pro quo guest host thing with Seth Johnson of the Home Tech Podcast. I'm going to be his guest host this next episode. He's going to be my guest host this next episode. So he's a really smart guy who works in the installer space, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show.
Cool. Yep. They also have a great podcast. Cool. So you can find all of our podcasts pretty much any place you can find podcasts. We're in iTunes, Zune. We're also out on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And we'd appreciate it if you're listening on any of those places to go and leave us a rating or a review. And then where it gets really fun is when you come and listen to the show live. We typically record this Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. unless my schedule of late is screwing things up. But your best way to know when we're doing the live show is just follow us on Twitter, because we'll usually tweet in the afternoon to let you know that that's the evening that we'll be recording. And then we also tweet as we're going live, just in case you forgot. Well, that's going to do it for episode 317. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next week for episode 318. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.